Welcome to Zero Downtime, the new podcast brought to you by DCD's editorial team in partnership with Vertiv, the world's leading critical infrastructure provider.
Vertiv has kept the world's leading businesses connected for more than 50 years. We build, deliver, and support critical infrastructure that's available, sustainable, and future-ready. Visit us at Vertiv.com and see what we can do for you.
Hello, and welcome to DCD's Zero Downtime broadcast.
I'm Dan Swinnow, Senior Editor at DCD, and joining me today is Chris Losey with the Idaho National Laboratories GAME program. Today we're talking about nuclear power, looking at where it's been in 2023, some of the highs and lows, where it's going to go in 24 and beyond, and where it fits into the data center ecosystem. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
For everyone at home, can you introduce, who you are, your background, and what you're doing at GAME and the National Labs?
Yeah, so official title, Innovation Technology Manager for the Gateway for Accelerated Innovation Nuclear. The acronym GAIN for short, because it is quite a wordy mouthful. It is a DOE initiative, also gets lumped in as programs. And it does support, basically every day we kind of come to work and try to figure out, how do we support and commercialize advanced reactors, and help get us there, as everyone's looking at this energy transition moving forward. So we do that with a number of different vehicles, right? I personally run what we call a voucher program, where companies can come and essentially apply for a work scope, or National Labs will do the work on behalf of the company. And really that's to help support advanced reactor technology developers, as well as, people who may want to go and look to utilize advanced reactors, as a either, process heat, electricity, or whatever they may be looking at, for their energy needs.
Mm-hmm. And from what I know, you're doing quite a broad range of work with quite a broad range of companies. So can you go into some of the projects that you guys are working on?
Yes, I mean, GAIN itself doesn't work on them, right? The labs work on them, kind of, and GAIN is the vehicle that's used to fund them. So just a slight, small clarification there. Really, the companies, right? So GAIN, the voucher program and kind of GAIN was stood up in 2016. And really, it was originally set up to help all the advanced reactor developers. So think, who are the companies looking at building these micro reactors, these smaller reactors, the larger reactors, right? And really helping open up the doors of the U.S. Department of Energy national laboratories to let companies utilize the infrastructure and the capabilities that exist there without building it on their own, right? There's certain things that are hard to do by yourself, especially as you're working with, uranium and irradiated materials. There's infrastructure you need to have to do that. So it makes a lot of sense to utilize the capabilities laboratory and the infrastructure that exists rather than building it out on your own. And we've seen, things, so that's how GAIN was started. That's where vouchers originally used. Going forward, right, we're starting to see some more interest from people like end users, like a Dow Chemical or chemical companies, as nuclear is looked at in terms of, as process heat sources. And also you're looking at, some utilities coming out of the woodwork, asking for some national lab support as they look towards how they could deploy advanced reactors in their fleet going forward.
Mm-hmm. Great. And, obviously you are knee deep in the world of nuclear and have been for a long time. How do you think 2023 has gone as a year for nuclear? Has it been a good year? Has it been a bad year? And what do you think will happen in the next 12, 18, 24 months?
Yeah, so I mean, I think 2023, obviously, overall, I think for nuclear has been good. I mean, some of the stuff has just come out from COP, right? The announcement that all these countries are going to triple nuclear energy at some point by 2050. That's a big lift, in the United States specifically. You've had lots of more, I'd say the interest is increased, right? And I've witnessed the interest in nuclear increase, in multiples really in the last, say probably 18 months to 2 years, came over to start this job, from the commercial side. And it wasn't really, it was like, we were talking about it, but, as I've continued in this role, it's just, about just over 2.5 years now. It seems like there's just a lot more interest, but it still is interest, right? It's not, In the United States here, we don't have firm demand, aka, you know, orders. Like say, I want to build this reactor here by some time frame, and that's kind of where the next shoe that kind of needs to move, you know, to get kind of get the industry moving in that direction of deployment. And when you say where it goes the next 18, 24 months, I mean, I think the biggest thing we're going to see, you know, there's the Department of Energy has supported advanced reactor demonstration projects. That's where you have your X Energy and TerraPower, you know, looking to deploy their reactors. I think you're going to see a lot more licensing effort here in the near future. And that's, you know, companies starting to work more, submit applications to the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and start to see, you know, how we move forward and get those reactors through the regulatory process. I think that's probably, you know, I think there's a lot of discussion that some of these companies are going to start submitting these applications early next year. So that'll be the next thing to watch to see how that works. And just the thing we did just hot off the press today is the there's a company out there looking to build a test reactor in Oak Ridge called Kairos. It's a basically a small true demonstration test reactor, but they actually just got word today that, you know, the commissioners approved the construction permit application so they can venture and start, you know, constructing that reactor. So that's an exciting step to see, right? We're real things starting to look to be built, which is where you need to, you know, kind of move towards deployment.
And, you know, when you say interest versus demand, what kind of part of the nuclear industry are you talking about? Is that your traditional $100 billion giant reactors? Are we seeing more moves to those SMRs, those small medium modular reactors? Are we seeing even any interest in micro reactors yet?
Yeah, so I think right now, right, so obviously, you know, we're completing in the United States, we're completing, you know, the large Vogtle reactors, Vogtle 3 and 4 there. And everyone will say they're over budget, behind schedule, because they are. But, you know, going forward, I think the interest is really, you know, the small modular reactor, right? The smaller design. So a lot of people define small modular reactors, 300 megawatts electric or less. We use more of a broad range, and, you know, I typically do, right? It's basically roughly that size, because there are some reactors at 340 megawatts electric, 345. In reality, there's no difference, right? They're all roughly around that size. So I think there's much more interest in the smaller reactors at this point. Micro reactors are becoming a thing, right? And there's definitely a number of micro reactor companies out there developing those technologies. And there's definitely interest, right? I mean, obviously you see that there's the Strategic Capabilities Office, which is run out of the DOD. They're building, you know, what they call Project Pele, you know, and that will be operated at Idaho National Laboratory. But that is a micro reactor, but that's specifically a DOD purpose. So there maybe that's, you know, the micro reactor side, there's obviously some people looking, the scales vary widely, right? Some very small, 1 megawatt electric, some a bit bigger, right? 20, 25, even a little larger than that. So your micro reactor range, you know, they all may have their different, say, niche market to help go support their end user, you know, energy demand.
And that's an interesting change in itself, right? Nuclear has gone from, you can only get it from a very big, very well-regulated utility, to now, in theory, you can have a nuclear kind of power plant to suit very specific needs and very specific locales, right? So it's a very different way of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the micro reactors, when they kind of like formed and people were pushing on the topic, I think a lot of people thought off-grid energy use, right, where you have stuff, maybe Arctic Circle areas, like very small communities, islanded communities, right, where you're transporting in petroleum or other sorts of forms of energy, and, you know, it costs a lot of money. So it makes a lot of sense, maybe where a micro reactor, micro reactor by itself is not necessarily, its size is not the economies of scale, right, that you get in larger reactors. So it may be from a, you know, dollar per megawatt basis, maybe a little more expensive. So it makes more sense, their first markets being those remote communities where they can support, you know, people who don't have a lot of, and not necessarily energy scarcity, but, you know, they're reliant on like truck loading stuff in, bringing stuff in by helicopter or boat, depending on the time of year. And it just costs a lot of money to do that, where if you had a relatively large to them energy source, they could just have it on all the time, right? They can provide a lot of value, a lot of reliability to those types of communities.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a very interesting kind of time. And you said before, interest and interest is there, demand is not there. What's kind of driving interest, if not demand yet? What the makeup of the energy grid changing? Is that driving some eyes towards nuclear as kind of the backup or maybe alternative option for renewables waves? What's kind of driving all of that interest and where do data centers fit into that interest?
Overall, right, you know, I think everyone, generally the world, you know, talks about this net zero by 2050, right? Not every country is going to be the same how you get there. United States specifically wants to have a decarbonized electricity grid by 2035, right? Net zero by 2050 overall. So it's a question of how you get there, right? Are you electrifying transportation? Are you electrifying industrial industry, you know, making steel, chemicals, other products? If you do that, if you electrify, you create this large, you know, grid demand, right? Where you need to start figuring out, well, how do you get supply that, right? Are you going to burn, you know, if you're going to continue to put carbon on the grid, you can burn gas, do that stuff. But if that's not the viable option and you need your region has a clean energy policy or something like that, then you need to meet utilities are trying to figure out, well, how do you meet reliability needs? How do you meet load needs? And then how do you do that, you know, with say the carbon policy or clean energy policy that may be that they have to meet in the regulation. So when you look at that, nuclear becomes a very attractive option, right? And data centers specifically fit in that load growth category, right? This increase in artificial intelligence, the power demands that go with it, you really end up with, you know, you're adding a lot of load where, yeah, people knew there was load there, but the load's starting to get very recognizable and larger to a scale, especially as data centers are growing, from my understanding, are growing in size, right? You're not just maybe, you know, 20 megawatts, right? You could have things up to hundreds of megawatts. And therefore, you know, those are not small load centers that just want power all the time or want the ability to have power all the time. So when you're trying to meet reliability, you know, you're adding renewables, you're adding the intermittency onto the grid. Really, it's the firm power generation that becomes the unique thing that is needed to help make this grid work. In the United States specifically, you have a grid that's been put together over the years, you know, 100 plus, right? And it, you know, now has to kind of operate and support as you add load here and there. You know, it was optimized at one point for whatever it was, and now you're adding load and you're trying to figure out how to get the reliability there. You know, I think nuclear becomes, you know, a very attractive option for people. So I think a lot of people looking at the grid look at system cost, right? And so, you know, maybe it be, you know, if there is a more expensive technology right now, right? Hopefully you can get down the cost curve. That's kind of where we want to go. But, you know, as you add nuclear firming power, you know, the reliability becomes an important part.
And when we talk about data centers and energy use, you know, there's a lot of PPAs out there about kind of off-taking from places elsewhere. There's always talk about on-site power generation. You know, when you hear about conversations with these kind of SMR companies, are they more targeting the utilities and then they're going to let the utilities kind of handle dealing with the data center players? Do you foresee a future where we have actual SMRs kind of in some sort of data center campus, just powering that campus? You know, how do you see that kind of relationship playing out?
I don't know. There's probably no one size fits all, right? I think, you know, it's going to be a bit of everything. It's going to vary based on region. It's going to vary based on, you know, what that power market is specifically, where those people are located. So I think in one sense, I think where we're at in deployment side, where we're at and what people want to do, I think the conversation is kind of wide open and how people want to approach it. There are some companies, say developers, there are definitely a couple developers that say they want to build the plant, they're going to own the plant, they're going to operate the plant, and all they're looking for is someone to sign a power purchase agreement. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, are people willing to sign long enough power purchase agreements, you know, where people can make the investments that need to be made to build everything out? That'd be a question that'll kind of need to be answered. You know, there are definitely some reactors which are intent to be sold to utilities or someone who will operate, you know, own and operate that plant, either put heat in a situation or put electricity in a situation on a grid. And then, you know, I think there's even, if you talk about the small scale, right, you are in the situation where you can potentially go off grid, right? You know, do an islanded setup. Now, is that really the optimal solution? I don't know, right? I mean, there may be ways that people can figure that out if they want to. It may just not be worth the headache, maybe, of, you know, creating your own little power grid rather than, you know, being connected to the grid like a standard configuration. But I think the options are still wide open with the kind of like a blank canvas a bit, I think, depending on what people want to look at, to go and pursue, you know, what works for them.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there's an opportunity for, say, industry, whether that's chemicals, data centers, you know, whatever, the big industry, to kind of drive what that market will look like in the future? Or do you think those kind of new players are really trying to go, we think this is the right model for us? You know, who's driving how those models look in the future?
You know, I don't know if I know enough to say who's driving the model right now. I think you still have, I mean, in one sense, you still have a lot of regulated utilities, really more, it's more of, in the United States, it's more of our Southeast regions, right? So you regulate utilities will tend to drive that discussion, probably with input from people who want load. In other regions, I think, you know, if there's deregulated markets, you know, people are free to kind of figure it out a bit how they want. But I do think if there's, now you have competing timelines, right? There's many, you know, there's some people who want to decarbonize the grid by 2035. There's other companies who've come out saying they're going to be net zero by 2050, right? So I think you have, if there's large companies with large power demands that want clean, firm power sooner, you know, they may have to figure out a way to support and maybe come together and, you know, buy large chunks of power, right? To help support their own building infrastructure. So one way, you know, if you have a large enough power demand where you could theoretically pull through and build a good number of power plants, say nuclear power plants, you know, you could actually, you know, say, oh, well, let's put a whole bunch of nuclear power plants here and let's build our large energy hungry data centers around it, right? Or competing, you know, like a chemical industry, if they wanted to, you know, site nuclear plants that could generate process heat, they could site them close to their facilities, right? And just pool process heat and, you know, create their standard design that they then go deploy in multiple locations, right? So I think those options are available. And, you know, the large companies, I think, if they decided to move down that path, could theoretically, you know, create that market on their own if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting time because no one's really come up with those answers yet. In terms of, you know, the last 12 to 18 months, we've seen a couple of kind of PPAs around nuclear power. I know Microsoft signed one in Canada with Ontario Power. There was kind of one data center next to a nuclear power plant that's kind of joined to that project. But, you know, in terms of what have you seen or heard around power purchase agreements and nuclear power, you know, especially for data centers, is that still a fairly rare kind of thing? Is that just not enough spare capacity at these plants for those kind of PPAs? You know, but how are you seeing that market?
I haven't seen a whole lot new in that market, right? I think you saw that, you know, the one you're referring to, there's a Cumulus data center where they basically built a data center kind of on the adjoining property of the Susquehanna nuclear plant, right? So there's two boiling water reactors that I think they can pull. It's like 450 or 475 megawatts electric from the two plants, or somewhere around that range. And, you know, I mean, I think that's a unique model that, you know, some utilities, you know, may go look at. I think it's kind of that, you know, each utility has a different market, and they may look at it differently. I mean, I think you're starting to see the current operating reactors look at various markets, right? You know, you have a hydrogen market. There's obviously data centers. And so they're all looking at, you know, what are the ways they increase the value of the electricity they provide, you know, with, you have a two-unit site producing 2,000 megawatts of electricity, right? If there's low, say, commercial demand, right, to put power on the grid, what do you look at your other options, right? Is that hydrogen? Is it help supporting other operations? In theory, you know, some of these plants, I think, have considered, you know, like the Susquehanna plant combined with a data center company. But those are, I think, few and far between right now. And, you know, maybe that'll change moving forward, but I think time will tell.
And, you know, there's been a few kind of good and bad headlines this year. You know, there's been movement on regulations and licensing and things like that. But there's also been kind of some bad headlines. It was New Scale. They made a big data center all over the crypto firm, but they also lost one of their main projects they were already along the way with some sort of government entity. And you probably don't want to talk about companies specifically, but do you think, you know, the bad headlines have maybe stalled progress at all? Or do you think the kind of the good headlines outweigh the bad headlines and you know, how the market is moving?
Well, so I mean, obviously, I can't comment specifically on what NuScale and the Carbon Free Power Project, right, where NuScale was working with UAMPS, utility. It's basically a collection of a lot of utility municipal power companies, right? And they did decide to cancel that project, right? So it's disappointing, right? Specifically for that, you know, because we want to see a lot of these succeed. But I mean, there's still a lot of other projects ongoing and in the works, you know, looking to move forward. And you have utilities that have come out and said they put nuclear power plants in their integrated resource plans, right? So they're putting those on the books. Looking at sites where they may go support those. So I think overall, I mean, for 2023, you're still seeing an increased interest, right? And a lot of that, so let's catch the interest a bit, right? So if utilities looking at it, but what you're seeing a lot is you're seeing a lot of states, regions, which are getting more of that increased interest, right? And a lot of that's driving from communities, regions who may be energy producers looking at the future and saying, hey, if we're decarbonizing and, you know, some of these other plants or these economic engines that we have, maybe a coal station, right? Gas plants could be other things. Maybe looking at being taken offline, you're looking at, well, how do I keep my town, my community vibrant? How do you do all some of these things, right? So I think the interest is increased a lot. From the state side, from the regions, from the communities who are trying to figure out where do they sit in this transition, right? I think everyone's starting to ask themselves that question. And then given that position, you know, what do they see as options to basically ensure, you know, we don't leave people and communities behind? Because I think that's the thing that could easily happen to a lot of communities if people just move quick and, you know, don't think about what the actions actually entail.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point I wanted to touch upon is that, I guess, the community impact, right? You have probably lots of company towns in America where the town is created specifically for a power plant however long ago. And now those things are being mothballed. Where do you go next, right? I mean, nuclear, I guess, from coal is kind of a, conceptually, a very easy switch to go from a coal plant town to a nuclear plant town, and we just serve essentially the same site with a different kind of mentality, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that's that way on paper, right? There's always details that people have to work through and how you do it. But no, that is one thing that has picked up a lot of interest. And you know, GAIN did support, you know, with a number of others, a workshop conference in November. To basically talk to communities and talk to some of the other people and kind of talk about what that coal to nuclear transition might look like for a number of people, a few case studies, a few other things. GAIN is actually also supporting a couple of pilot projects, you know, on what a coal to nuclear transition may look like. So, you know, for a specific plant, you know, what does that, say, technology assessment look like? You know, for other plants, you have... they may be more industrial based. So is there basically an industrial aspect of building a nuclear plant? But yeah, you have a lot of towns, regions. I mean, one thing, a lot of this, you know, people call it in the United States, a lot of the flyover country, right? You know, a lot of the central states, you have Wyoming, you have Colorado, you have Montana, right? You know, have Kentucky, a lot of regions in between where there's a lot of mining, right? They get a lot of coal, they get a lot of ore, and they ship it to other places. Wyoming sends trains south, you know, go burn at coal plants, and send the cars back north to fill up and go turn them around again. And for those regions, right, they're very proud of what they've done. I mean, in one sense, coal has energy from the United States has really brought this country a long ways, right? We have fairly cheap energy when it comes to our electricity bills. And you know, so we've been able to do lots of good things with that. But as you're looking at transition, right, like what are you going to go do? So these communities are relying on their tax base of the plant. They're relying on the jobs for that plant. So when you have a nuclear plant, there's a lot of jobs that could be, say, they're similar, right? A little bit different. You're working in a nuclear plant, but there's still people that need to, you know, you have carpenters, you have people working on pipes, you have electricians. A lot of those things will transfer over. You have nuclear operators, which are a bit different, but they're trained to do that, you know, by the training services. They can be trained up to do certain things. One thing about nuclear plant is you do bring jobs, right? That's one thing. You do create a tax base. And so in, you know, some of the original studies that looked at this said you can actually increase your economic output if you say built a nuclear plant, just say in that region, right? You may not be able to build directly on the actual site, but you could build near it, right? And you could use that infrastructure that exists. So, you know, that transmission exists, right? So you can hook the nuclear plant into the same transmission lines. Therefore, you're not having to build new transmission, which is another challenge, right? And when it comes to the changing infrastructure landscape. And so it basically provides, in theory, right on paper right now, you know, there seems to be a very good path to move that direction to help, you know, help these communities, maybe increase economic activity in the communities, bring jobs to community, and then also use the infrastructure that currently exists to help support the energy transition.
And so I guess on that point, if I'm a data center operator thinking about where I place my locations, you know, proximity to good transmission lines and stable power is always, you know, those places are already mapped out, already well known, I'm sure. So I guess the idea that their next wave of new power will be maybe on the site next door to an existing power plant is probably, I guess it makes the transition for everyone slightly easier.
It could. I mean, the possibility exists, right? I mean, I think we're still scratching the surface a bit with some of these, right? I mean, there's definitely, you don't create a nuclear project overnight. But there's definitely a lot of regions. You've seen regions who are, they're reaching out saying, hey, we don't know much about this nuclear energy. Like, can you help us out? Can you give us some background, right? So basically gaining a bit is, you know, helping some of these communities understand, you know, hey, here's what it is, here's what it isn't. And with that, communities and regions, states can then make informed decisions around what they may want to pursue. And I think that's the important thing, right? As long as everyone's making an informed decision, at least that's at least a reasonable decision.
And, you know, I guess leading on from community impact, you know, nuclear energy has always had its opponents, always will. Data centers have increasingly come across, you know, local opposition, people who don't want data centers in the area for a number of reasons. And, you know, I guess I'd be interested here, do you think kind of doing a new combined nuclear and data center that offers promise because it has jobs, or do you think that's kind of a double boogeyman that might put people off even more than one or the other in isolation?
I mean, you could probably have it either way, right? I think these are much more of those community specific discussions, right? Where the regions and communities are going to have to kind of figure out what works for them. I think the allure of it, right, though, is that if you're a data center company and you just want to site this big power hungry behemoth somewhere, and it doesn't bring a lot of jobs, and maybe, you know, there's other things where it's just like, hey, this is a big building, not a lot of great jobs, but, you know, we can build it. Maybe it helps with the tax base or not, right? I think there may be some regions that are for it, maybe more regions that are against it. You just don't know. But if you're looking at people that are looking at the energy transition and looking at, you know, their communities their livelihood maybe, you know, not being very impacted by a coal plant shutting down, where they're trying to figure out what is the next thing for us, right? If they're energy communities, I think, and I can't speak for them directly, right? But I think they realize, you know, there's a lot of stuff here, right? We're going to produce energy. If we produce energy maybe a different way, maybe that's not so bad, right? You know, nuclear thing, we got to learn about it. We got to figure it out. But, you know, they can then hopefully make an informed decision, right? But so if you're a data center company trying to bring something that maybe has a more economic impact by, say, combining a power generation source with your data center, which could be nuclear energy, you know, which could bring jobs and a larger tax base, maybe that provides more incentives for communities and regions to kind of figure out a way to make all that work together. Right. And it also provides these regions a path, you know, for, you know, economic impact to go beyond. Cause I think the one thing is, you know, as we all talk about this, you know, net zero by 2050, but, you know, nuclear energy by itself is not a small feat, right? It's big. These are not small projects and they're not short projects, right? So nuclear plants are designed, you know, for 60 years, 40, 60, 80 years, depending on where some of these, you know, developers will be, which means you're not signing up for a short-term commitment, right? You're signing up for a long-term commitment. So these are long-term, potentially generational impact commitments that people may be making here in the next, you know, 10, 15 years, which, you know, either, you know, help support a community for a good amount of time, or, you know, they could make different decisions as well. But so they're not small.
I mean, data centers are the same, right? You know, they all have life expectancies of 20 years, but some of the oldest ones have been going 30 or 40. So it's the same kind of concept. You know, I know Gain are doing a number of data center studies. So I wonder if you can go into some of the studies you're doing and some of the work you're doing around how those two industries might combine.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, I've you know, attended a couple of data center conferences, right? And, you know, you talk to a few people, and I think the biggest thing is, right, we're looking to put together a study, which is really, you know, how does nuclear and data centers, you know, kind of work together, like what works, what doesn't. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, as you have all these types of, you know, reactors, right? And maybe sizes of data centers, right? You know, what makes a lot of sense? Does it make sense to have like this big giant campus, right? With a lot of power, kind of that you're, you know, bigger plants that you're powering the campus with. Does it make sense to have a lot of smaller reactors, right? That you may power a bigger, you know, data center with or not? So I think really just trying to look at what this looks like if you kind of, you know, say co-located data centers and nuclear plants together, and what it might be and what it might not be. It's more to show, like, I think what could be possible, just to get people thinking about, you know, hey, what's the best way to move forward here, you know, or not.
Mm-hmm. And most of the listeners here will be from that data centers industry side. Is there stuff that are there unanswered questions you think, you know, you want to hear from the data center industry? Are there things that you really want to know that you just haven't heard from them yet? Or,
I mean, I personally would be interested in kind of seeing, you know, what a larger study around nuclear and data centers may look like, you know, and if there's something that, you know, the labs might be able to do to help support that. That it'd be interesting to look at, right? And even, you know, I think we have our voucher program, which could be open for someone to come in and maybe use some of the laboratory tool sets and capabilities to explore something there. I think the more interesting part in data centers, right, is do people really want to be, I hear a little bit of both ways, right? Do people want to be on the grid and just, you know, pulling power off a grid, which I think is easy, but I think given a lot of the, say, decarbonization push that people are getting, does it make sense, or can you truly run an off-grid situation? People would want to consider that. You know, I've heard kind of both ways, right? I mean, obviously people would love to just outsource, you know, the power generation, but it seems like people are being forced into considering more that, you know, what does that off-grid, you know, generate your own power situation look like, which is not always easy to do. There's a grid for a reason, because it's more easier for people to connect into and operate with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, they have some very open questions. I think there's lots of data center operators that would prefer to be not disconnected, but maybe rely on the grid as a backup option. But like you say, generating power on site, that's a different skill set. I'm sure some operators would be happy to kind of outsource that to a third party that runs on their campus or their wider business park or something like that. So, I think there's a lot of questions, and I'm sure there's a lot of interested listeners around what that future could look like and what the real options are going forward. We've had COP 23 or 28, the COP conference in Dubai recently. There was quite a lot of nuclear kind of announcements made out of there. You know, what was your thought on the conference? Do you think whatever came out of that will help drive the industry forward?
personal opinion, I mean, you see these things come and go, right? And people make a lot of high level decisions. Do they truly drive decisions going forward? I mean, I don't know. I follow the headlines and kind of look and say, hey, well, you know, adding nuclear in there and doing some of these things is not a bad thing, right? But ultimately, like, you know, at the end of the day, right, when it comes to a lot of these things, when it comes to, like, say, you know, United States, utilities are, you know, have to make decisions based on what their public utility commission says, right? What they have to abide by whatever state regulations say. You know, companies are going to make their commitments and then drive their decisions based on that. And you know, states and regions are going to decide how they best want to position themselves and what they want to have in their, you know, their own energy policy in their own kind of region. So you can, these big conferences, you know, there's a lot of momentum, a lot of movement there, but in the end, it comes down to a lot of these local regions, you know, making those decisions, and the companies trying to figure out how they're best going to abide by what the states and, you know, their regulators are putting forth to drive, let's say, you know, our energy transition in the United States, right? That's kind of where a lot of the rubber's meeting the road right now is locally and regionally.
I was going to say rubber hits the road. You know, it's one thing to say at a conference, but actually implementing this stuff is very complicated. And I guess regulation, are we moving in the right direction? Are there still barriers and frustrations around regulation that you expect to kind of ease in 2024 and beyond? You know, what's the situation there?
I mean, obviously the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has an important job to do, right? They have to regulate a very interesting and unique technology, right? Which can, you know, there can be, you know, detriments to it. But I think going forward, I mean, I think you've seen, you know, well, obviously, you know, today, that's what I was trying to check, right? It's like the Kairos Hermes, you know, test reactor did get a construction permit. It was a fairly aggressive review schedule, you know, from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I want to say they did it in about 2 years. I mean, I'd have to go back and look. I want to say that the published review schedule, I think, was 21 months, but ultimately when they finally got the commissioner approval, which was today, I don't know where that ultimately led them from a timeline, which, you know, from a starting standpoint from the NRC so far is good. So that's a step in the right direction. I think, you know, the biggest thing is you want to see where some of these, when these companies start submitting their applications next year, you know, what starts to happen and kind of fall, we need to follow along and see. I mean, I always say the biggest thing is, you know, we need to get the NRC stuff to review, right? So let's get these applications in, let's get, you know, license applications in, and then kind of see where things go from there. Because, you know, right now there's always a lot of people like to push on the regulation side. And, you know, maybe there's some valid arguments in certain things, but it's not, you still got to get the regulator something to review before, you know, you can, you know, say there's anything truly wrong there. So, you know, we got to give them the information so they can review it. And then hopefully we can have process improvements if there are learnings that we need to, you know, incorporate going forward.
So it's much on, I guess, the industry side to push the regulators so the regulators have something to act on.
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, there's a lot of discussion, what we call the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the pre-application engagement. So there's a lot of people putting white papers or, you know, putting, say, what we call topical reports, which may be they want to put a methodology in front of the NRC so the NRC can bless the methodology. So when they come forth with an application, you don't have to address that one specific topic, right? Because it's already addressed with a report. So you just refer to your report and you move on. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to, you know, if you regulate technology, right, you got to get the applications in there to start, you know, getting, you know, approvals, getting licenses and stuff like that. And right now there's not a lot of applications, say, in the actual, you know, licensing application queue right now, right? So hopefully that's 2024. Hopefully we're going to see more of that moving forward, which will, you know, allow us, you know, hopefully to, you know, beat any other kinks out of the system, right? And then, you know, figure out any other improvements that, you know, people may need to make as we get there. But you know, licensing is a, see, licensing, it's kind of a known process, right? You know, it's not like you can't say some people, you know, if you know what the system is, you can manage around the system, right? So I think for people who know it, you know how to manage around the system, you know what to expect, and it can be accomplished.
And, you know, we're kind of running close to the time. And one of the more interesting kind of nuclear announcements for us this year was Microsoft announcing a nuclear fission PPA with a company. You know, I know you're not too directly involved in fusion and fission, but what's your view on that? Are we as close as that PPA might suggest we are, or is it still pie in the sky?
I'm not a fusion guy. I'm a fission guy. I'd say that there's a sister group called Infuse, right, which is run out of Oak Ridge National Laboratory. That definitely does a lot of the same thing as GAIN does for the fusion community. I don't know. Coming from my side, you know, you always hear like the fusion's another 20 years off or something like that. I mean, it does seem like companies are making much more progress in that regard, right? There's a lot of things. Obviously, you had the National Ignition Facility, right? You know, achieve some of that stuff. They have yield greater than one, right? So they got more energy out than they put in. That's, you know, there's promise there, but I mean, you still have, you still have to, you know, how do you capture it? How do you get it all out? How do you get it in a situation where you can actually generate energy, right? And what is ultimately that the cost of doing that? In the end, you know, that's there's still questions to be answered for what that looks like. I still personally, coming from my side, I'm always a little bit questionable when I see the announcements like that. Like, really? I didn't think we were that close. I thought there was still a lot more to work on. But you know, I'm no expert in that area whatsoever. So I mean, take my opinion for what it is. It's my opinion.
Wonderful. Well, just kind of finally, I wonder if you have any more final points, final thoughts on, you know, nuclear industry, especially that kind of SMR and microreactor, and where it overlaps the data centers over the next even 5 years, right? Because these are often long cycles. You know, where do you think this is going to go?
No, I mean, I think so. We're moving in the direction, right? I think you're still in the early stages of this game, right? But if you're truly looking at, I mean, I think you're. I always feel, given the interest that's happened here in, let's say, the past 12 to 18 months, it feels like we're within, you know, that 1 to 2 year window, which we're going to start to see more announcements, more things moving forward, which may be projects, right? Maybe other announcements in terms of things firming up and figuring out a way to go forward. And I think that's ultimately where you need to get to, right? I think you still have, you know, obviously, you know, you saw there's still some questions on cost, right? I mean, obviously, which is, you know, no one expects the first one to be the cheapest thing, but it's how do you get to the deployment numbers you need to get to drive down a cost curve, right? And there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of things looking at that here, probably in the next 6 months or so. And that'll be things to be worked on over the next few years as well. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, people is trying to figure out establishing that order book, whether it's domestic, plus international, and really understanding how they move forward to true deployments of some scale to drive down that cost curve and get the industry where it kind of needs to go, which is, you know, back on that solid footing of, we can deploy plants, we can move things forward. So it's an exciting time. And the interest is staggering at this point, I think, for a small team like GAIN to kind of run through and deal with. And so it's just to be interesting to kind of see what all the next announcements will be. And hopefully, I mean, you know, we're starting to see some groundbreaking here for, you know, maybe not commercial plants, but plants that will hopefully lead to commercial success going forward.
Wonderful. Well, Chris, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I hope everyone at home found it useful and interesting. And please reach out to myself or Chris if you want to carry on the conversation.
Sustainability is no longer a nice to have. It's a priority. Vertiv Power, cooling and IT management solutions for critical infrastructure are designed to reduce the use of energy, water, and space. From innovative liquid cooling to dynamic grid services, we work hand in hand with customers to enable them to meet their data center sustainability goals. Visit us at vertiv.com and see what we can do for you.
Thanks for listening to the Zero Downtime Podcast. brought to you in partnership with Vertiv, the world's leading critical digital infrastructure provider. Don't forget to like this podcast and subscribe to our channel. We'll see you again next time.